Rosalind Byrne, our special guest, and we're going to take your phone calls next, and I would love for you to share your animal stories with us, that special bond you've had. Share that with us. Also, as we were talking, Rosalind's written a book about nanotalk, nanotechnology, ethics. You can jump on board with that, too, on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back. Rosalind Byrne with us. Rosalind, great job, by the way. What are you working on next? What's the next project for you?
I'm writing a book called Walking with Raven, which is unfolding around this relationship that's building with this rescue horse that I have in my life now. I was living in the middle of the city here in Central Virginia and went to do some work at a rescue facility. And the next thing I know, I was bringing one of those horses home with me because she came up behind me and said, "I'm the horse you've been looking for. I'll help you deepen your work."
I'm the horse you've been looking for all your life.
Yeah, right. I know some men that talk that way too.
Yeah.
Women. Yeah, right. So anyway, I went for it. Now I live on a horse farm and I get up early in the morning and pick up manure, poop from pastures and spread. And I'm like a farm girl now, but it's mostly I'm trying to learn to live differently through living with these animals.
And you know what? I bet it's really changed your life.
It's changing it every day, and so that's what this new book's about. And it's going to be a while before I get that out because I'm busy on the farm. I do still have a day job, but that's what I'm working on.
Back to the ethics work that you do in the engineering. Did the university create the curriculum, the ethics portion, or did you?
No, I came into a department that was already interested in ethics, but they've sort of ramped that up, which is part of the reason I was hired. Two of us are formally trained in ethics in that department. And I think more and more accreditation organizations are wanting to see that engineering schools have this in the curriculum. It's expected because engineering is coming with much more risk in addition to all the benefits it brings. And so these are serious questions we're asking now.
In the field of engineering, for example, if you don't have ethics, what happens?
Oh, well, bridges collapse and people die.
Because what, they buy cheap material?
Well,
they just don't care?
Of course. All kinds of things come into play there. Or there's pressure for getting bids out quickly and competing for bids, and you do what you have to do to get it and get the job done.
So ethics is also having a conscience.
Sure, but it's a conscience that's been fed with some of what our values are from this society.
I mean, how could somebody knowingly build a bridge with cheap material knowing that it could collapse at any given time?
Well, see, that's the problem. People have different roles in the bridge, so you might be responsible for designing this little part of it over here, or you might be responsible for procuring this particular material over there. And so you don't have to feel responsible for the whole because you only did your part and you did what you were told to do, you see. And so what I'm trying to get my individual students to do is to see to the extent to which they have responsibility for their part that they are willing to step up to it. But who's got the responsibility for the whole? Well, you've got your project manager. But, you know, even there's so many cases like the O-rings with the Challenger that went down. Now, was that a matter of lack of ethics? Well, you know,
well,
or was
maybe,
it?
Maybe.
It might have been, or was it poor management? You know, and
or all of the above.
Or all of the above. But then when Enron was messing around with the grid in California, that was for profit only, and people were suffering. That's flat out wrong.
What about the BP oil spill?
Well, now you see, Is this just neglect, or is this you just didn't take responsibility? The ocean, you have to take more responsibility. I'm furious about that, actually.
You should be. You should be. All right, let's go to the phones. Monique in Sunland, California, to get us started. Hi, Monique.
Hi, George. Thank you. You have the best show on the
planet. Thank you so much.
Doctor, thank you so much for talking about ethics tonight. Yeah, just real quick, I saw the aftermath of a casino parking lot that went down about 12 years ago. So It's really important. But my question for you is regarding communicating to the horses. I took an animal communications course a while back with a Gail Thackeray. It was great. I actually got the name of a horse just by putting my hand on the picture. It was amazing. I have been a vegan for 11 years, vegetarian for 16 years, and my question is, there's still a lot of people I feel in the in esoteric type of fields that they're not vegans. They think, okay, the animals came here for us to eat. So I'd like to know, in your communication with the horses, does this ever come up? You were talking a little bit about it, like broccoli, well, it has a life force. But the fact is, with broccoli, you know, if you take a floret, you're not killing the whole plant. If you take a limb, well, you're devastating the animal. So do the horses ever talk about how veganism is actually becoming quite popular now, and how things are actually changing in the energy of people? What do they have to say?
This is a really important point, and I'm glad you're bringing this up. I have not had a horse discuss what we eat. There are times I've been around horses when I wonder if they can smell the barbecue and what they feel and think about that, because, you know, maybe the people are cooking hamburgers out on the grill and the horses are in the pasture next door. But, you know, I don't know that they make the connection that that could be me. I think it's a very personal choice that one has to make about their relationship with other beings and what they eat and what that means. It's possible that it changes your own vibration and then changes the potential relationship you have with horses. I was a vegetarian for about 15 years, and then when I got pregnant, I'm going to blame my daughter in utero was craving a certain kind of meat, which I added to the diet for a while. But for me personally, not having heard horses talk about this, I just have to go inside and ask myself when I sit down to any meal, what is it that I'm eating? And where I come down is with a lot of gratitude and a lot of thanks and recognition for everything that went into whatever I eat. But it's a very personal journey we have in terms of what we put into our bodies and the life that we take in order to do that. That's what I feel. I'm glad you're having this journey and that it's been good for you.
Have you ever had the horse talk to you about things that were just outrageous that you had to step in? Like, you know, I have an owner that beats me, help me, or anything like that?
You know, I was in the middle of a consultation with an owner, and I wish I had another word for it, because I want to say, you know, a caretaker. Let's do it that way. I was in the middle of a consultation, and she hauled off and slapped that horse. And it wasn't the kind of slap where you just, like, back off, you know, you're in my space or don't do that to me. It was really vicious. And it took my breath away. And she looked at me and said, I know you don't like that, but I have to do that sometimes. And I thought, wow, I can't help you. I can't help you. Because you're not even in a place where you're open to what this horse is trying to say. And what had happened was the horse had said to me, I don't want to talk to her because she's going to just send me away. Something will happen. I don't feel safe talking to her. And I told her that, and she said, oh, he's fine. He can trust me. It'll be okay. And then I revealed what he was saying, and she hauled off and slapped him. I just broke my heart, and I will never go back.
We've got Douglas in Silverdale, Washington, with us now. Hey, Douglas, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Oh, hey, George, how's it going? I haven't talked to you for a while.
Good. All's well. Thank you.
Great. Yeah, I had a family cat who passed away some years back. She was just about 2 or 3 weeks shy of her 23rd birthday.
Wow, that is amazing.
Yes. And even more amazing, she passed away on Orthodox Easter. And being Christian, I'm Christian, I know you are, so I know you know the verse where Jesus says to his disciples, in my Father's house there are many rooms.
That's right.
She came to me, I don't know, a couple months later, and spoke to me telepathically, of course, in a dream. And she said, and she was in an old house we lived in, and she said, here I am, I'm in my room, everything's fine.
Huh.
So just built it, just. Faith. We always need things to build up our faith, and certainly animals are a very big part of that.
They sure are. It's a great story. Rosalyn, you could write a book on just the various stories that come in about all kinds of animals.
Oh, there's so many stories. If we just talk to each other and share those stories, we'll realize more and more how very much communicative and alive and present our animals are with us in life and after.
Yeah, they are. And there's that special connection between human and animal that's very real. And I don't know how some people could hate animals. I mean, really hate them. I don't get it. Do you?
I don't think they hate the animal. I think they hate themselves and they're projecting it onto the animal.
Good point. Maybe. We have Candy in Vancouver, Canada. Welcome to the show on the international line. Hi, Candy.
Hi, George. How are you?
All righty.
Good. You know, they're doing some renovating around here, and I hope that that doesn't interrupt the conversation.
But, okay.
Yeah, I had an incident with a horse. I don't know if you remember, but I train police dogs and work with tracking.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I've been getting into jumping, and I am horse crazy. I love horses. And I'm working with people that are Olympians, and these are athletic horses. And I had an incident with a horse that I'm really looking for an explanation. It was a situation where I was told by my instructor not to go around these two specific horses, and her words were, one would kill you on purpose and the other would do it accidentally.
Jeez.
Now, these are horses that are athletes, and the Olympians, a lot of them, they don't really care. They just want the horse to jump 7 feet or 6.5 feet. So they don't, you know, if they can ride, they're very well equipped with their riding abilities. And, you know, so they don't, you know, if the horse stomps them or tries to throw them off, they don't, you know, that's part of the game, I guess, with them. But this particular horse, I was told by the owner that I could feed it. And I was told by my instructor, who was also an Olympian, I was told by my instructor, don't go near it. And so I said, really? I can feed it? You know, I was all excited. And I went up to this horse, and I fed it a piece of an apple, and it had wild eyes. And I've done a lot of things in the bush, in the wilderness, and even I've stood in front of bears, and they don't have wild eyes, and not like this horse. And she came up to me. I gave her the apple, walked away, gave the horse I was riding an apple, came back, and I gave her a pat. And I looked down when I gave her a pat, and she picked me up by the collar. And now this is classical riding, so my collar is like a, you know, a man's tight white shirt. And she literally got her mouth around my collar somehow and swung me like a rag doll and threw me to the ground. And I remember thinking, okay, is that like a, you know, a dog? Is that like a mother dog correcting her child, picking it up by the neck? And anyways, to make a long story short, I just want to know, I did react a specific way, but I want to know how should I have acted, in your opinion, in that situation?
You know, I've met a few horses where I've looked in their eyes, and what you describe as the wild eyes, and I've seen it, and in a couple cases, it looks almost like they've lost their minds, and that something's wrong in their brain. And I don't know if this came from maybe early trauma to the brain or the way they've been handled, but I would say that you have to be very careful. And you saw in their eye, in that, was it the mare? You saw in that horse's eyes that something was amiss. And so I would say that be very careful, because they're not predictable, at least based on the ones I've met. Now, if you want to go to my website, rosalynburn.com, and send me a comment and send me a photo of that horse, I can try to be a little bit more helpful. I almost
need right,
to see
cool.
the image of the horse, but I can probably be helpful.
What would have Rosalyn's secretariat have told you if you were around that horse during its Triple
okay.
Crown that time?
Let me tell you that I went to Kentucky last year, and I went to a place where they have old retired racehorses. And one in particular they were having trouble with, and they had to put a double fence around because it was being very aggressive when people came to visit, and they were worried that someone would get hurt. And they wondered if I could check in and see what was going on with this horse. Well, I went up, and he had won the Preakness and one other. He wasn't a Triple Crown, but he had gotten two. So I went up to him, and I said, I understand you were a racehorse and that you were pretty fast out there, but what's going on with you? What's wrong? Well, he was really angry. You had asked about whether horses could be angry, and now I'm remembering. He was angry, and he was angry because he had a very deep relationship with, and I couldn't tell if it was a jockey, but I think it was more of probably a groom, somebody that just was with him all the time, taking care of him. And he said suddenly he was gone. Well, what happened was when he lost the second race, he was sold, taken out of the race, and she put on Air Horse One and flown to Japan and used as a stud. And he was really angry because all of a sudden he was no longer out there racing. He wasn't in the limelight. People weren't celebrating him. He was just on a stud farm in Japan. Well, I think a lot of the horses there are fine. In his case, he was pulled out suddenly, having a lot of success and then a loss. And he felt like he was no longer of use and, like, tossed out, whereas he'd worked really, really, really hard for people and to be successful for people and celebrated and then suddenly devalued. And it put him in such a fury that he was dangerous. Secretariat, on the other hand, was loved by her owner. I mean, his owner. She was so devoted to him and did everything and kept him in her life. And so I think Secretariat would have had a very, very different story of being cherished and in relationship and celebrated and honored.
Well, I think so, too. Let's take one more call before the break, and we'll come back with more. Barry in Rock Hill, South Carolina. Hey, Barry.
Hello there, George. A week from Saturday, Everett, Washington.
You got it. At a packed house.
I can't wait, buddy.
There you go.
Anyway, let me two quick things to say. Talking about using organs from horses and pigs and stuff, a friend of mine, I swear he looks just like Tommy Dienhauser. He had 2 years to live, George, and they put a pig valve in his heart, and that was 15 years ago, and he's still alive.
Same valve, too. Wow.
Yep, no kidding. And listen to this. My gosh, George, it was a horrifying story just last night on George Knapp's story about the way the horses, the pack horses and donkeys and mules are treated in the Grand Canyon. They're absolutely driven up and down those trails. It was horrifying. Did you happen to hear the story?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've known about it. George has been doing that for some time. That's got to be a very sad story for you, Rosalind, what they're doing to these horses.
You know, I'd never been there, and I went to the Grand Canyon in January for the first time to take my son and daughter, and we were just coming around the corner in our rental car, and I passed the lot where they keep these mules. Oh, my goodness, it took my breath away. I could feel the heaviness around them. I didn't stop, but I just sensed, oh, my goodness, what's happening to these animals? And I didn't know about the story that this gentleman's talking about. But we use these creatures as a means to our end. We use them as beasts of burden without realizing that they have feelings, they have needs, and we use them till they die.
All right, we're going to come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM with final phone calls. Don't go away. Welcome back. Rosalind Byrne with us. We'll take your calls. Our final segment here on Coast to Coast AM, also noted author, Waking to Beauty, When the Horses Whisper, Nanotalk, and a few others, too. And Amazon's got all your books, Rosalind. Any place else people can get them?
BarnesandNoble.com has them, too.
Great. Nothing like a good old bookstore, huh? That's good. Now, with ethics that you teach, is it a changing field?
Well, sure. That's interesting. It has to adapt to the changing technologies and the way science is moving. If you follow sort of a philosophy of principles, you just keep applying those principles no matter what the technology. Like, for example, in medicine, the Hippocratic Oath of doing no harm is a principle of ethics. But what does harm mean when you're changing the way you practice medicine? Well, the same in engineering. we have to keep asking ourselves what is harm and what is good, because we keep changing the parameters of what we can do.
What do you think of the soul of an animal? Does it exist?
Oh, well, we talked earlier about looking in the eyes of the horse.
Yeah.
I think that's what we're seeing when we look.
Because some people will tell you that, let's say their cat died, but they will see paw prints on their bed. The cat obviously is in another realm, but they'll see the indentations of the walking of the cat. How do you explain that?
The cat's walking on the bed, but without their three-dimensional body, they're walking with the body that continues after death. I've had that experience with hearing the dog paws going up and down the hallway floor after
That's right.
the dog died. Yeah, sure.
Were you always a believer in the other side?
Well, as I said earlier, I came into this world with that awareness as a very young child. So, yeah, it's
and never stopped believing it.
Well, I mean, we have our five senses that tell us about this three-dimensional world, and then we have our other senses that help us to feel and sense into and remember the other elements of our existence.
What was the experience as a child with the ghosts? What happened?
Well, we lived in inner-city Philadelphia, and I was pretty young, like three, and I used to go down and watch my grandfather put coal in the old furnace, and there was a woman down there that would stand there and talk to me, and she told me not to play with matches and to be careful of fire. And it turns out nobody even knew about this woman. Turns out that somebody had owned the house previously and died in a fire in the house.
So she was warning you.
She was warning the little girl downstairs, and she was down there. I can see her in my mind's eye right now, many, many years later, because I have a memory of her.
Does she stay with you, though?
No. Go we on. Left that house in the 60s. And
she stayed in the house.
Yeah. She left. She stayed with us. We left.
All right. Back to the phone calls we go. Trisha's with us in Carlsbad, California. Hello, Trisha.
Hi. Thank you.
Sure.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my goodness. I'm loving this show tonight.
Perfect.
I worked in animal welfare for 16 years, and I started out in animal welfare. Well, my cat got me actually into the field. I had one cat that had kidney failure, and she actually turned me into a vet tech. And then I had another little cat, her name was Isabella, and we got into pet therapy. And for 14 years, we did pet therapy. We did various patients, hospice patients. And that cat actually got me into hospice care, which I still am in today. And that little cat actually, when I lost my real job of 14 years, I had a very serious drinking problem, and I passed out on my kitchen floor. And I can't even tell you how long I was on my floor. That little cat brought me back, and I could feel her as I didn't want to live anymore. To tell you the truth, I was just devastated. There were so many things going on in my life. And that little pet therapy cat, Isabella, she came upon me, and there was this loving presence, and just everything was going to be okay. And she brought me back and realized, you know, my life was worth something, and I needed to continue on. And that little cat, unfortunately, she left this world in 2014, she died in my arms, and 6 months later, I was really devastated how much I missed my connection with this cat. I prayed, like, I really want my cat back. Well, 6 months later, this little cat that I have now, who is now called Isabella, she's not a therapy cat, but she is so close to being just a little dear to me, but she came into my life, and I used to call the first Isabella Bella Bonita, and this cat actually came from Bonita, California at the county shelter. So I do believe that they do. I think this cat actually came back, only my first Isabella doesn't want to work anymore. The second cat is actually, I'm a different person now, and I have a different cat. So I do believe in that. But the other story I would like to share is I have a friend who had a dog for 14 years. And when her dog passed on last April, she swore up and down, no more animals, no more pets, I'm going to be traveling. And she was actually pet sitting for me in February when I was going to visit my mom in Texas. And all of a sudden, there was all of this hissing and scuffle going on in her room in the night, and she didn't know where it came from. She thought it was my cat. Well, it turned out she had a cat that actually broke into her house.
Broke in?
Broke in, yes. I kid you not. This cat broke into her house, and I witnessed it when I came back from the trip. There was a black cat that had been kind of stalking her, and she was coming in under the house into the vents, and she was pushing these vents up, this cat. And this cat was strong, and the vents were, you know, very tight. Well, she's putting, like, bricks and stuff and everything on top of the vents. But this cat was determined to make it known that she wanted to be adopted by this human, who was my best friend. Well, long story short, my friend finally gave in and said, you know what, I think you're supposed to be mine. There's a message from spirit here. And it turned out the day that she decided that this cat was going to be hers was to the day that her precious dog had went to the next realm. So she feels that this is definitely, it was a spirit message. And she's actually having some times in her life right now where she's being very comforted by this cat. And she does feel that this cat is a gift from God. So in summary, I just feel like all of our animals, they are just precious, precious gifts. And if we listen to them in any way, either, you know, mind, body, spirit, I mean, our animals do talk to us in so many ways on which we are able to listen if we just are open to listening.
I love that story. Rosalind?
There's a really sweet film that came out last year called A Dog's Purpose, which sort of speaks to this story about animals finding us when we need them and also possibly coming back to us, you know, as different animals over the course of our lives. It's very important, I think, that we, at least if we have an opportunity and an animal comes into our lives, that we see it as a gift because they have so much to teach us. And in so many ways, they support us as much as we support them.
And, of course, we text and tweet, and Tom has one for you. Go ahead, Tom.
We're going to go with a text from Virginia in South Dakota. She says, please ask Rosalind why my dog will take the food from her dish, drop it on my clean rug, and eat it. It drives me crazy. Is she trying to tell me something? That's what she says.
Well, I can only speak generally because I wish I knew the dog's name or had a photo of her, but it could be that she's trying to help this person, Virginia is her name, in some way, perhaps to relax a little bit more or to put less value on her rug, or maybe she's just being playful. I had a dog that always grabbed one shoe just before I needed to leave to get to work on time and made me late every day until I finally just started to slow down and relax and enjoy my morning. Who knows?
Would you say that you're an animal communicator?
Oh, my husband calls me an equine empath. I don't know what title to put on it. I just know that I feel very open to the flow of communication with other beings, especially animals.
We go to Kitty in Taos, New Mexico now on the wild card line. Hello, Kitty. Good morning.
Hello. Good morning. I wanted to say that what she's saying about the telepathic communication is real.
Oh, yeah.
I've experienced it myself.
With what kind of animal?
Well, I've had it with a cat and with some goats. It's not ongoing, like we don't have conversations all day, but it's usually in a case of emergency. The first one was my cat, and he was like, we got to get out of here. We're in big danger. We're going to get killed. And I was like, what are you talking about? Everything is great here. And then I was like, oh my God, did that really happen? Did he really talk to me? And I didn't know there was this man that was abusing them, and he killed them like 2 days later.
Oh, jeez.
The second time was I had my goats, and I moved to a different place. And all of a sudden, the leader of the goats says to me again telepathically, we're leaving. I'm like, what do you mean you're leaving? Well, we're going with this guy that he feeds us, and he gives us better hay than you do, and he gives us sugar cubes. And I'm like, are you crazy? You can't go with him. They'll never treat you as a pet. They'll eat you.
Well, within an hour, someone came and stole them.
Oh.
But it's really weird because when it happens, there's no moving of the mouth or anything. The face kind of changes. They look at you all knowing. They say something. You say something back telepathically. And then, like, when it's over a few minutes later, you're like, oh, my God, what happened? Did they just talk to me? But then they go back to being just like animals. And the other thing that I've noticed is that right before they die, because I live on this big ranch and I got all kinds of animals, right before they die, like a day or two before, they're very loving. It's like they're almost saying, thank you for taking care of me and spoiling me. And then within a day or two, something happens and they die.
They know. They sense things. You know, when we had that tsunami years ago, Rosalind, in Indonesia?
Yes.
All the animals head for the hills before the tsunami hit. People didn't know. They were still playing in the beach and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
How do they have that extra sense?
Well, we have it. We just don't pay attention to it. We had a huge hurricane coming through here about a decade ago, and all the warnings were it's going to hit any time now. And I was busy doing this and that, and I really, really, really wanted to just run the water and fill the tub with water before it hit. And I was busy, and I looked at a praying mantis came in the house, and then my dog cowered in the corner, and I thought, wait a minute. And then, boom, there it was. I hadn't done the tub yet. They knew. I think I have to believe that we have these senses, but that we lose them. We teach them out of ourselves. You know, when we start school, you know, we do the kind of rote learning that desensitizes us to our awareness in our body. And so I just want to believe that we also, as animals, have these senses, but that we are so caught up in that part of our brain that processes information around the future and different ways that we lose the body teachings. And I think that's where they get it, right from the body. I think the body knows. We can smell ions change when a storm is coming. We can feel the change in electricity, but we don't pay attention to it. That's my guess.
Let's go to Ross in San Diego. Welcome to the show, Ross. You are on the air with us. Go ahead.
Hi. How is everybody? Oh, it's such
good,
a great
Ross.
Show. Just another perfect example of how incredible Coast to Coast is. I love this show tonight, and this is why I listen all the time.
Thank you.
And I love, Rosalind, where you're coming from. And I do the same thing. I mean, you stay in the present moment. You stay present. You stay out of your thoughts. And I worked with horses for a long time ago. But I have an incredible story that, I mean, I had some horses do some incredible things and dogs, but this story, I went into a store, and I was in the back left-hand corner of the store, and I heard something. I looked up where the wall meets the ceiling, and there was a mirror in the corner that was tilted down, I guess, whatever, people to look out, I don't know. There was a mirror up there, and there was a little sparrow, and it was banging against the mirror, and it was in distress, and I immediately felt it, and I immediately looked at the bird, and there was a psychic years ago on excuse me, on TV, and she talked about pictures, making pictures for animals, and I immediately saw the front door of this establishment opening, and I immediately just went into that with the bird, and the bird turned around, flew, and landed on the product on the top shelf right next to my head. I immediately started walking as fast as I could. The bird hopped along the product all the way to the front of the store.
I love it.
I got to the front of the store, and there's the turnstiles that are chrome, you know. I couldn't get out because that wasn't an exit, and the door was closed. Well, the bird, as soon as I got to that, the bird jumped on the pole, the chrome pole, right next to me. And I'm standing there looking at the door, visualizing this door opening, and the bird's looking at me. And then finally, a lady comes through the door, and the automatic doors open. I looked at the bird looked at me, and it flew right up.
How do they know these things, Rosalind?
Wow, that is a beautiful moving story.
That's
she
neat.
Tuned in.
This was fun.
I was there, and the bird felt it. That is wonderful.
Great couple hours. Rosalind, thank you so much. Stay in touch. Let us know when the new book is done, okay?
Thank you so much, George. What a delight.
Rosalind Byrne, her latest book here is called Waking to Beauty. Man, if you got to love animals, folks. You just got to love them. We've got a great week of programs for you here on Coast to Coast AM. So wherever you may be, you'll find us on the radio dial. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burles, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.